Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The GMO revolution began back in the 1970s. In 1992, the Food and Drug Administration, the government agency that's responsible for guaranteeing the safety of food products, declared that genetically engineered foods are generally recognized as safe. Today, ingredients from genetically modified crops can be found in more than 80% of popular food products. We're talking about corn chips, baked goods, cereals, and tofu. Many additives and processed foods are also now derived from GMOs. In 1998, today's guest, public interest attorney Stephen Drucker, formed a coalition of groups that filed a lawsuit against the FDA to obtain records on safety testing and labeling of genetically engineered foods. The suit forced the agency to hand over 44,000 pages of internal files to the plaintiff's attorneys. After combing through reports, messages, and memoranda, Stephen Drucker says he found several startling discoveries. He writes, quote, "By the time my investigation was finished, I had compiled extensive evidence of an enormous ongoing fraud. It reveals that the FDA has ushered controversial GMO products onto the market by evading the standards of science, deliberately breaking the law, and seriously misrepresenting the facts, and that American people were being regularly subjected to novel foods that were abnormally risky in the eyes of the agency's own scientists," end quote. So how did the FDA reach the conclusion that GMOs are safe for human consumption? When it comes to genetically modified foods, has the FDA abdicated its responsibility to protect the public? These are some of the key questions that Stephen Drucker answers in his new book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, How the Venture to Genetically Engineer Our Food Has Subverted Science, Corrupted Government, and Systematically Deceived the Public. Stephen Drucker is a public interest attorney and executive director of the Alliance for Biointegrity, and he joins me here in studio. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thanks for having me as a guest.
Well, it's great to have you. So you have so much information in this book about the history of GMOs, how we got here, about the media, about science. But first, let's go to the heart of the matter. I'm guessing that a lot of people have never heard of this lawsuit that you and this coalition filed in 1998. You got a trove of documents that revealed a lot of interesting things, namely that the FDA's own scientists said that GMOs or genetically modified foods are not safe. Tell us, like, what really stood out for you in those documents?
Well, actually, just to be clear, that the scientists said that these foods couldn't be presumed safe. There was really no safety testing evidence that had been done that. And in fact, the files emphasized that they really didn't have extensive data. And of course, before the FDA administrator should have been able to presume they were safe according to the law and the FDA's own regulations, there should have been technical evidence supporting the safety of every one of them, and there wasn't. But based on the knowledge of how genetic engineering had created disruptions, and it was well known that it had the potential. The technology itself has the potential, anytime it's utilized to produce a new variety of a food crop, to create unintended toxins or allergens or other harmful substances. That was well known. The FDA scientists were emphasizing the potential of genetic engineering to create these problems, that it poses risks that are not posed by conventional breeding, and that these foods should be tested, safety tested, before they're marketed. That's what the law requires anyway in our country. The FDA scientists were telling their superiors, you know, what the law requires is also what science requires. If you want to stay on the right side of science, you will require safety testing. Including toxicological feeding studies. Well, the FDA administrators, who since 1986 have been operating under a directive from the White House, it first came from the Reagan White House, but it had been renewed by every successive administration, a directive to promote the biotechnology industry and ease the introduction of its products onto the market, chose to favor its promotional role and abdicate its regulatory role. And also to abdicate responsible action. The administrators who were in charge of this issue apparently suppressed everything. I mean, those documents, those warnings from the FDA scientists were suppressed, and the FDA in public, in its policy statement issued in May of 1992, declared the agency was not aware of any information showing that foods derived from genetic engineering differed in any uniform or meaningful way from other foods. That's an outright lie, because their files were loaded with such information.
And so talk a little bit about these FDA scientists who actually conducted these studies, or who came out with the conclusion that GMOs could not be presumed safe.
Well, they were scientists who first were acting as scientists. I can't emphasize that strongly enough. There are many scientists who have been putting out pronouncements about genetically engineered foods who are speaking more as spin doctors than scientists, and my book demonstrates this. But these scientists were scientists from every major branch of the FDA that should have weighed in on this, and they were selected because of their expertise to form a biotechnology task force. They weren't volunteering. They had been put on a biotechnology task force by the FDA itself, and they were representatives from microbiology group, from the toxicology group, from the Center for Veterinary Medicine, because GMOs, it was known that they would be fed in very large percentage of the diet of farm animals, which they have been. So there are special research skills. Pretty much every major scientific division within the FDA was represented. And these scientists took their role seriously. They actually thought they were supposed to behave as scientists, which they did. They studied as much evidence as was then available, and as they wrote their opinion as scientists giving an opinion. Unfortunately, what the FDA administrators didn't want to hear was any opinion that went against their promotional proclivity, even if it was on sound science. So they basically covered it up and lied about it.
Now, because this is such a heated debate, can you give us one example in the lawsuit that stood out for you that those of us who might not even understand the science behind GMs, and we can talk about that later, but genetically engineered food, what stood out for you? Is there anything like that are people eating today that these scientists talked about and wrote about back then?
Oh, well, because in 1992, there weren't any genetically engineered foods on the market.
Right.
There were several in the pipeline. I don't remember. There may have been specific foods that were mentioned back then. I don't remember that. Their main warning was generally, and this is important too, the main warning was not about the specific expression products of a foreign gene, although that's always a source of concern. They were talking about the background risk in general of using the technology itself, because regardless of what gene or genes are put into an organism and what proteins get expressed, there is a risk in any genetically engineered organism that there are unintended side effects and that there could be new toxins or allergens or other harmful substances created that were not intended and that would be very difficult, could not be predicted, and would be very difficult to detect without rigorous testing, the likes of which hasn't really been done yet for most genetically engineered foods. So that was their major, the major warnings that were coming up were about the inherent risks of using genetic engineering. And what they said is relevant to every genetically engineered food on the market. Now, by the time the FDA's policy statement on GMOs and its presumption that they could be regarded as safe came out in May of 1992, the FDA was already well aware that there had been a major epidemic in the United States in 1989 and 1990 caused by an ingestible product of genetic engineering. In fact, it was the very first ingestible product of genetic engineering. It was a food supplement of the essential amino acid L-tryptophan that had been produced through genetic engineering, and it caused a major epidemic. And the FDA did its best, and it succeeded in creating massive confusion about the fact that genetic engineering was even involved in that. The FDA went out of its way to obfuscate the facts, to get genetic engineering off the hook, as did the mainstream scientific establishment, which have behaved as cheerleaders for genetic engineering. And unfortunately, through all that subterfuge and disinformation. Most people hearing me speak right now are hearing for the first time that a genetically engineered product that was consumed by millions of people actually seriously sickened between 4,000 and 5,000 people who were taking it and killed dozens. Because what we hear time again is no product of genetic engineering has ever been linked with a human health problem. That's just not true. One was, and the evidence as a whole points strongly toward the genetic engineering as the cause of the unusual toxic contamination that caused that epidemic.
Now, the FDA scientist who said that genetically engineered foods could not be presumed safe, did any of those scientists protest or speak out when the FDA declared that genetically engineered foods are generally recognized as safe in 1992?
To my knowledge, none of them spoke out in public, and that probably would have meant they would have been harassed, probably lost their jobs, certainly lost career advancement opportunities. But we do know that there are memos from some of those scientists protesting what the FDA was planning on doing when it became clear that the scientific input was being systematically disregarded in the drafts of the policy statement. In fact, one of my favorite memos is from a microbiologist at the FDA saying, "What has happened to the scientific elements of this document?" He said, "It's basically just reading like an industry, what can I do to avoid getting in trouble, you know, guidance." So there were several scientists that were protesting internally, but if they had tried to blow the whistle, there were not good whistleblower protections back then. Even now, with whistleblower statutes, they're still not adequate to prevent untold misery being imposed on the lives of whistleblowers within the government. But these scientists didn't speak out, but I basically became the whistleblower. I did what they were too afraid to do. I've basically brought out what they said, and they were speaking as scientists, and what they said was covered up, and the FDA then lied about it. And this has to be known because just the level of disagreement, the overwhelming, in fact, it was overwhelming consensus within the FDA expert staff that genetically engineered foods pose unique risks and can't be presumed safe, that shows the FDA has been breaking the law because these foods were not generally recognized as safe even within the FDA.
So talk more about the scientists' concerns. When they said genetically engineered foods cannot be presumed safe, elaborate on that.
Yes, well, for instance, one of the scientists was mentioning the potential for the forced, because genetic engineering, by the way, is so unnatural, the foreign genes generally are not going to even function in a new organism in a foreign environment. So the genetic engineers have to take off the elements that ordinarily would cause a gene to express when it's needed and in the right quantities within its home environment, because those elements are not going to receive the proper biochemical cues in a foreign environment. And they put on these strong boosters, basically that were taken from viral genes that are good at forcing the expression of their genes in any plant environment. So what we have in the case of most GMOs is these strong boosters to get the genes to express. Well, one of the FDA scientists, at least one, there might have been more, was warning that the forced overexpression of any product could create it could create a drain on the system resources. As he said, it could swamp the plant's resources. And because, again, think of it, a lot of energy is being directed toward a totally unessential function, and that leaves less energy left for important functions that could be very necessary, especially in some kind of unusual circumstances. But he also, it's known that there could be nascent pathways, biological pathways, metabolic pathways, I should say, that ordinarily are not active in a plant that get stimulated into action by the presence of these strong boosters. So that was warned about because that means that's one of the routes through which unintended novel toxins could be created, toxins that had not heretofore been seen within that species and would be very difficult to detect without extensive testing of the whole food. So Those were warnings. The head of the Center for Veterinary Medicine wrote a memo on behalf of himself and the other scientists at the Center for Veterinary Medicine, and that's a big division within the FDA, saying that they believed that the issue of feeding genetically engineered food to livestock, to farm animals, presented unique animal and human food safety concerns. So what were the concerns that he said that existed, they felt, for the human population? They said there could be unintended harmful residues from the GMOs that build up in the tissues or the eggs or the milk of the farm animals that have been consuming these foods at a very high level, because a majority of the diet of most farm animals for years has been GMOs. Mm. And he said that those residues could still be present within the meat or the milk or the eggs that the humans are going to eat. And we think this is a serious potential problem that we have to test for.
So speaking of testing, I was very surprised to read in your book, you write, it's unlikely that actual safety testing would happen at all if it were not required. When it is required, it's woefully inadequate. Even in the nations that mandate some toxicological testing, the stipulated studies last no more than 90 days, which isn't long enough to detect the many types of problems that develop over an extended time. So we're talking 3 months here that these foods. Okay, so let's use a real example, because I'm trying to make this very tangible for people. So the top seven genetically modified crops, you've got corn, soy, cottonseed, alfalfa, papaya, canola, sugar beets. Let's take corn. Uh-huh. Because a lot of people eat corn chips, a lot of people eat popcorn. Right. It's in a lot of our diets.
Right, corn starch,
right.
Corn oil.
Yes.
Corn is pretty much an additive in almost everything.
88% of corn in the U.S. is genetically modified. If you're buying corn from an average grocery store, you're eating genetically modified corn. Okay, so on corn, what has actually been tested in the United States?
Well, there have been... It depends on which GMO corn. There are different varieties. But what we do know is none of the tests have been adequate. Now, it's very important to note that any producer could dump any genetically engineered food on the U.S. market without even telling the FDA. And according to the FDA, that's just fine and dandy. The FDA doesn't even require pre-market notification, let alone safety testing. So it's important to note that in the U.S., there's not a single GMO, including corn, that the FDA is requiring any testing done on at all. So that's important to know. Now, that's in violation of our law. A law does require that testing is done, but the FDA is breaking the law.
Because you have said that the U.S. has some of the most rigorous food safety laws in the world.
Yes, that's correct.
But?
But in the case of GMOs, the FDA has refused to enforce the law and is actually hoodwinking the public about what the law even requires. So the FDA pretends its hands are tied. It can't do anything more. It can't even label these foods. That's malarkey. The FDA should have never let these foods on the market in the first place without requiring that each one of them was demonstrated safe through rigorous testing. That's what the law requires. That's what the FDA's own regulations have required for many years before there were any genetically engineered foods. So that's just important to note. But even in the European Union and Canada, where there is some testing required, from up until 2013 in the European Union, there were no requirements for even toxicological safety testing with the whole food. They could get by with these shoddy analytical studies. And so finally, in 1990, as you noted, the European Union started requiring 90-day feeding studies with the whole food. Well, that's far better than what had existed, but 90 days is still not long enough to be sure that every potential problem has been caught. In fact, we know from some of the longer-term studies that have been done that in the case of one study, problems that, and it was studied on a genetically engineered corn that had been approved, and the researchers basically took that corn and they subjected it to 2-year study instead of the 90-day studies that had been relied on by regulators, and they found out that tumors started developing beyond 90 days. They weren't even present at 90 days, but as they extended the experiment, then tumors began to form. And some of the tumors in one of the sexes of the rats, either male or female, didn't start showing up, I think, till at least a year out. So that shows why you can't just cut off the studies at 90 days and expect that you're going to catch everything. In fact, most foodborne illness is long-term and cumulative. It's not the dramatic toxic incident of somebody eats a hamburger with tainted meat from salmonella and they get violently ill right away. Those you can track much more easily. The dangerous kinds of food problems are those that are long-term. They build up through repeated exposure, cumulative, like smoking cigarettes was. People didn't drop dead after their first cigarette, not even after smoking for a year, but it built up. And it took long-term epidemiological testing to finally establish the link and to find out that smoking cigarettes was indeed killing people. But it took years and years to determine that. That's why, really, our law for food additives is preventative. We don't want to let foods... The law does not intend for new additives to foods to make their way onto the market without adequate testing, and only maybe 20 years later, after a lot of agony, to finally discover that they shouldn't have been put on the market in the first place. Our law is preventative, but the FDA has prevented the preventative measures from taking effect. And it's one of the greatest frauds ever perpetrated by an agency, the United States government, and the FDA has been getting away with it for more than 20 years. And the time has come to, you know, pull the plug on this and to make the FDA bring them up and call them to account. And my book is doing that. If enough people read it, it'll be stopped.
And you spent about 15 years on this book?
Well, researching it and then over 10 years writing it.
Stephen Drucker is a public interest attorney. His book is Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, How the Venture to Genetically Engineer Our Food Has Subverted Science, Corrupted Government, and Systematically Deceived the Public. And Jane Goodall writes the foreword in the book saying that Drucker has, without doubt, written one of the most important books of the last 50 years. I shall urge everyone I know who cares about life on Earth and the future of their children to read this book. Stephen Drucker will be speaking at the Soil Not Oil Conference in Richmond on Friday. He's on a panel on GMOs. That's this Friday. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. He'll also be speaking at the Heirloom Expo in Santa Rosa next Tuesday, September 8th at 6 p.m. And he's out with a lengthy book about GMOs and the lawsuit he and others filed against the FDA in 1998 to obtain records on safety testing and labeling. They forced the agency to hand over 44,000 pages of internal files. And he writes that the FDA scientists said that GMOs could not be presumed safe, but in 1992, the FDA declared that genetically engineered foods are generally recognized as safe. So do you remember this lawsuit? What questions do you have about its findings? And what questions do you have overall about GMO safety? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We've got to go to break in about a minute. Do you understand why there's so much confusion over this issue?
Yes, because the confusion has been carefully created. My book documents that, too. I should note for the listeners that my book involves far more than just the lawsuit. It's the fraud of the scientific establishment in general. That's why the subtitle emphasizes the subversion of science. So that's why it took so long to research and write, because as you mentioned, it's a history of genetic engineering and all of the various deceptions that were perpetrated in order to enable it to advance at every key stage of its history.
And I just want to jump in here because Brandy just wrote, I would like a balanced discussion on this. Well, we did invite Monsanto to join us. Thank you for mentioning that. And they sent us an email saying, look at our Biotechnology Industry Organization Trade Association website. Find your answers there. We also invited Will Salatin to join us, who wrote a piece for Slate, Are GMOs Safe? Yes, and he didn't return our calls. So I'll continue on that right after this.
This is your call on Local Public Radio to join in today's conversation. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email question or comment. The email inbox address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, World Have Your Say. At noon today, Backstory, and following that at 1, Alternative Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. On tomorrow's show, we will be joined by Gary Rivlin. He's an investigative journalist who has a new book called Katrina After the Flood. How are people in the Gulf faring 10 years after Katrina? That's tomorrow. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, I'm speaking with Stephen Drucker. He's a public interest attorney who, in 1998, formed a coalition of groups that filed a lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration to obtain records on safety testing and labeling of genetically engineered foods. The suit forced the agency to hand over 44,000 pages of internal files to the plaintiff's attorneys. They combed through reports, messages, and memoranda. Stephen says he found several startling discoveries. He says, by the time my investigation was finished, I had compiled extensive evidence of an enormous ongoing fraud. He writes about this and a lot more in his new book, Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, how the venture to genetically engineer our food has subverted science, corrupted government, and systematically deceived the public. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And again, I want to mention that we did invite Monsanto to join us. They sent us an email saying, take a look at the Biotechnology Industry Organization Trade Association. GMO Answers is a website funded by Monsanto, Syngenta, Dow, Bayer, and BASF, and you can find all the information you need there. We also invited Will Salatin, a reporter with Slate, who got a lot of attention after he wrote a piece called Are GMOs Safe? Yes, the case against them is full of fraud, lies, and errors, but we did not hear back. What are your thoughts on this, Stephen, just the controversy around this? I mean, when we do shows about chemical companies or like the toxic effects of DDT, people don't write in and say, where are the chemical companies on the other side? I mean, you want things to be, quote, balanced,
right.
But it's just interesting the response you get to GMOs.
Yeah. The problem is that most of the information that people are getting that purports to be balanced from scientists is not balanced at all. There's been tremendous spin doctoring at best, but many scientists and eminent scientific organizations have actually themselves descended into dispensing disinformation. My book documents this. So basically what I've been saying today, these are facts. Now, in contrast, I have yet to hear, I think, any scientist promoting GMOs on any radio or TV show or writing articles in which one cannot find several just flat-out false statements that are being made in the name of scientific truth. It's astounding the kinds of false claims that are being made, and they keep getting away with them. And they can be demonstrated to be false, but the mainstream media has been creating an imbalanced report because they continue to suppress negative evidence that comes out against GMOs. Just one example. What the FDA scientists said in their memos, that is highly newsworthy. The mainstream media to date has still suppressed it. I've been interviewed time after time by investigative reporters that wanted to do exposés, but their editors would suppress it, prevent it from being published. Or if the editors wanted to do it, or a TV producer, somebody higher up, suppressed it because it has failed to get out there. The American people paid the salaries of those scientists. Those scientists were speaking as scientists, and yet the American people, somehow the managers of the media have deemed that what the FDA scientists said is not fit for the ears of the American public because it would make them begin to doubt genetically engineered foods, which somehow the mainstream media has decided that it's their job to promote.
You write that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, they were at the press conference about this lawsuit, and none of the TV networks reported on the suit, and it was not mentioned in any national newspaper.
That's right, and they had the data. I read quotes from the FDA's memos, and many of the people present, the media present, asked to have copies of some of the key memos, which I faxed to them. But funnily enough, none of that made it into the news reports. What made it in were the standard statements from the Grocery Manufacturers of America or Sinus in their pay or in the pay of big biotech firms. They were the people that got quoted. In fact, one claim from one of the pro-GMO spokespeople that got quoted extensively in most of the newspaper articles that came out after the lawsuit that we filed when we initially filed the lawsuit was the claim that we were trying to turn back the clock on science. Well, we went out of our way to get 9 well-qualified life scientists to join as plaintiffs of the lawsuit. It was an unprecedented step. One of them was a professor of cell biology at UC Berkeley. Another was a molecular biologist, a professor at State University of New York. Another was a professor of biology at Rutgers. There was a professor at NYU Medical School. Eminent, well-qualified scientists, and they were ignored. And the whole point of our lawsuit, we were trying to restore sound science. That's why we had the scientists there. So we're accused of trying to turn the clock back and being anti-science. It's just astounding what they get away with.
Well, we've got a number of phone calls and a lot of emails. So let's hear from GS in San Leandro. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Gruker, for your courage, your thought thoroughness, I've got to say, your long-term self-discipline bringing all this to the fore. Why am I not surprised? It seems to me very powerful lobbies have had a part to play in suppressing the kind of information that, you know, a lot of us vegetarians and whatnot have suspected for a long, long, long time. I have never understood why we simply don't require that all GMO products be labeled. I know that's been brought up, and it's been quietly suppressed or angrily suppressed and talked against and all that. But to me, it seems like that's a very obvious thing. Put that out there and then let the individual people decide while all the rest of it gets sorted out. I'll take my offer. Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you for the nice comment you made. And your point is certainly good. If GMOs are going to be on the market, then they should be labeled. That's what happens in every industrialized country, major country, except the U.S. and Canada, I should say. But there's a much more important point. GMOs shouldn't be on the market at all, not without being demonstrated safe. And what most people don't realize is to primarily focus on labeling, we're taking the attention off the fact that these foods are on the market illegally, because you don't label a food that's illegally on the market and hasn't been adequately safety tested. You take it off the market. So I myself don't advocate for labeling because it would tacitly admit that these foods are on the market legally, and I just know that's not the case. So my role is to point out that these foods should have never come to the market in the first place, and that labeling is not the primary remedy we should be seeking. It's banning them, getting them off the market. I know that may sound extreme to many people, and people, if they want to continue campaigning for labeling, that's fine. It's having a great effect educating people. But from my perspective, I know too much to argue for labeling. I'm arguing that these foods should be recognized for what they are, unreasonably risky foods that should never have come to market without having been demonstrated safe, and they should be off the market as soon as possible.
All right. Well, thank you for that phone call. Let's go next to Stephen in Oakland. Hi, Stephen.
Morning. There was one study, and only one study, the Sirolina study, that found problems with GMO causing health effects in mammals, but that has since been retracted. You know, the Economist writes about some anti-GMO activists who vandalized a field of golden rice in Philippines, and this is produced by the public sector, not by corporations, the idea to increase the vitamin A in rice, and which would help improve the health of children, which contributes to hundreds of thousands of cases of blindness and premature deaths by the lack of vitamin A. But I wonder if your Mr. Drucker could comment on the book review from Bruce Chassie, a professor of food safety and nutritional sciences at the University of Illinois, who writes that Drucker has no formal scientific training and he presents no verifiable evidence. He has stated that his claims are based on guidance received through prayer, Vedic science, and Maharishi Vedic psychology.
And that's bunk. That is total bunk. You want my comment? First, I'd like to ask you, how in the world do you feel that the Seralini, that one Seralini study, was the only study on GMOs that has showed harm to mammals? There are several of them. My book discusses several of them. There's a wonderful free resource, GMO Myths and Truths. You can find it at earthopensource.org, written by two geneticists that documents several studies that my book doesn't have room to go into. So wherever you've been getting your information, they have been giving you a false impression. There are several studies that have demonstrated statistically significant harm in laboratory animals. Now, on that so-called book review, if those scientists, the professors, actually had read my book and written what they wrote, then they are committing a major fraud. But I'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say they've, quote, reviewed my book without having read it. Because I have a very solid academic background from UC Berkeley. Philosophy undergrad, law school, I won high honors at both levels. And who is it that cross-examines expert witnesses in court? It's lawyers. A good lawyer can show that a scientist is lying, and they often do, or that a scientist doesn't have good evidence to back his claim. So especially if a lawyer has a philosophy background, I'm functioning that way. Now, also, this claim that there's no credible evidence in my book, if he's read the book and states that, then he is committing a major fraud. There are several well-credentialed scientists who reviewed my book and have written glowing praise endorsements for the book, stating how scientifically solid it is, how meticulously researched it is. There are over 85 pages of endnotes. So I invite you to read the book and you decide for yourself whether those statements were fair and balanced.
And this might be in relation. We have an email from Eric. I think this could be the same article that our caller was referring to. This came out of Academics Review. It says it's a nonprofit founded by two independent professors of food-related microbiology, nutritional and safety issues on opposite ends of the planet. And Eric wrote this email. They said in this review of your book, given the nearly unanimous international consensus among scientists, societies, national academics of science, medical societies, and government regulators that GM crops pose no new or different risks and that they are, if anything, less likely to cause unintended harmful effects than crop varieties produced using older, less precise breeding methods, there really wasn't much of a story that Drucker could come up with to support his case against GM foods.
Yeah, well, it's interesting how many scientists who've read the book have said that it's incisive. In fact, a professor at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies has stated the book is incisive, insightful, and truly outstanding, that it's scientifically solid, that it dispels the cloud of disinformation that has convinced people that genetically engineered foods have been well tested and are safe. There are many other endorsements. Anybody can just read the free sample on Amazon and look at the beginning and the endorsements from scientists who have actually read the book and are speaking in a responsible manner. In fact, on that L-tryptophan, that genetically engineered L-tryptophan supplement that I mentioned earlier, my book brings out a whole new level of evidence that from research that was conducted at the Mayo Clinic, and one of the main researchers gave me permission to report on it, to be the first to report on it. So how can they say there's nothing new? There's extensive new evidence on that on that supplement that caused an epidemic, and it's in the chapter 3 of my book. So either they didn't read the chapter, or they're purposely lying and trying to distort what's in my book. And that's par for the course, by the way. Either people, you know, one way or the other, they're twisting the evidence, trying to make anybody who comes out against the party line on GMOs look stupid or bad, or the fact that I gained all my evidence through prayer. Where did I ever say that? I mean, that's just so outrageously crazy. Yes, I practice transcendental meditation, and that's allowed me to, I think more clearly. There's a lot of research on that, but that's not where I got my information. I don't know where these guys get their stuff.
Today I'm speaking with Stephen Drucker. He's a public interest attorney. His new book is Altered Genes, Twisted Truth, How the Venture to Genetically Engineer Our Food Has Subverted Science, Corrupted Government, and Systematically Deceived the Public. Stephen filed a lawsuit in 1998 along with, what was it, 8 scientists or 9 scientists?
There were 9 scientists that were plaintiffs. That was unprecedented for a group of scientists to actually become plaintiffs in a lawsuit. Claiming that a federal agency's policy was scientifically unsound. That hadn't happened before.
He filed this lawsuit in 1998, forcing the FDA to hand over 44,000 pages of internal files to the plaintiff's attorneys. He writes about what he found, and he writes about his interactions with scientists, with the media, where we go from here. So what questions do you have about genetically engineered food? Do you think that your food should be tested for safety, and what does that mean exactly? Should your food be labeled? Do you have concerns about genetically engineered foods, or don't you? Do you think that, what do you think about the science and about the articles that you have read on this issue? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Again, we did invite Monsanto to join us. They told us to go check out this GMOAnswers.com website, which is funded by Monsanto, DuPont, Syngenta, and Dow, and said these responses and resources will help you provide fair, accurate, and balanced information to your listeners. And Stephen, I understand that you have tried to reach out to Monsanto to respond to your book, and you did not get a response.
Yes, I challenged Monsanto to basically refute my book. I demonstrated how a couple of the key statements in one of Monsanto's brochures that it had sent Jane Goodall, that their chief technology officer had sent Jane Goodall trying to set her straight and inviting her to request more information. She passed that email on to me, and so I requested as information, please show me evidence of every statement, assertion of fact you can find in my book that's actually false, just as I have shown that some of the assertions in your brochure are false, and I documented why they were. And I gave them 2 months, plenty of time to reply, and they ducked that because, of course, they don't like to battle fair and square, nor do those so-called scientists on Academic Review, which, by the way, is not an academic review at all. It's their own website. And they duck out. I'd love to debate those guys. I'd love to debate them. And I challenge them to debate me anywhere in a fair and square debate, or I challenge them actually to take the Monsanto challenge, look at the Monsanto challenge, and within those guidelines, refute my book, not in the take the cheap shots that they've done, to actually, in a fair and responsible way, try to refute my book. I don't think they can do it.
Well, again, we did invite them, and they told us to check out GMOAnswers.com. Let's go next to Jan in Hayward. Hi, Jan. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good morning, and thank you so very much. I have been tremendously concerned about this, and I wonder if your guest is familiar with Vandana Shiva, who's been very concerned about the selling of the Monsanto genetically modified seeds to the farmers who cannot plant any other crops, and then the diversity of crops, and then we're told that this is to feed the world's hungry, and she refutes that completely. I wonder if he could elaborate or tie this in with what he's doing on his work.
Well, Vandana Shiva is going to be speaking at the Soil Not Oil conference in Richmond this weekend, and Stephen Drucker will also be there.
Right, and she will also be giving the main keynote address at the Heirloom Expo. Her address actually follows the talk I'll be giving. I speak at 6 o'clock p.m. Next Tuesday, and Vandana Shiva then speaks at 7 p.m. So, You know, and actually all the talks that afternoon are very good. So if people do want to come learn more about this, they could come, even if they just came for that first day of the expo, they will hear a lot of very important information. But it's a 3-day expo.
We've got a bunch of emails. Another one, I'd like to hear Stephen Drucker speak specifically about a cover-up potential for harm. So far, I haven't heard what was covered up or anything about anyone getting hurt.
Oh, well, first, as I mentioned, the FDA warnings were covered up. The warnings of the FDA scientists have been covered up. So that's a major cover-up. Has anybody been hurt by that? Well, the American public did not understand, you know, what was going on. These foods wouldn't have come to market if those warnings had been actually fairly discussed and the FDA had told the truth and said, our scientists have done an extensive investigation, a study, and they've told us we can't presume these foods are safe. And as a matter of law, we're not supposed to anyway. So we're going to require every one of them goes through extensive toxicological safety testing before it's allowed on the market. That would have basically killed the whole enterprise right there. We wouldn't be having this debate. Also, I don't know, I wonder if this emailer had listened to the first part of the show in which I mentioned that the first ingestible product of genetic engineering killed dozens of Americans, seriously sickened between 4,000 and 5,000. Hundreds of those people remain invalids to this day, and the evidence as a whole points toward the genetic engineering as the cause of that unusual toxic contamination that turned an ordinarily healthful nutritional supplement into a deadly agent. We also know that there have been many experiments in which the laboratory animals that were fed genetically engineered foods have been grievously harmed by them, and those studies have been published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. And by the way, somebody who mentioned the Cirillini study that was retracted, contrary to all the guidelines of retraction. In fact, that's why it's been republished by another journal that wanted to restore scientific integrity. That's a solid study. There was nothing wrong with it except it showed problems with GMOs. And so the GMO proponents cannot abide that. That's why they attacked it viciously and unfairly. But there has been significant harm shown, and the potential for harm has been shown, and that's been covered up.
We got information about a New York Times report about Monsanto. It says what Monsanto wished for from Washington, Monsanto and by extension the biotech industry got. If the company's strategy demanded regulations, rules favored by the industry were adopted. And when the company abruptly decided that it needed to throw off the regulations and speed its food to market, the White House quickly ushered through an unusually generous policy of self-policing. This is a piece in the New York Times, and we would have liked to have asked Monsanto about this. But again, we did invite them, and they told us to go check out their GMOAnswers.com website, which is funded by the Council for Biotech Information, a number of these companies like Monsanto and Dow, and they said you'll find accurate, balanced information there. So unfortunately, they couldn't join us. Let's go next to Dave in San Francisco. Hi, Dave. Hello, Dave. Let's go to Suzanne in Illinois. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And if you can be brief, Suzanne, we're almost out of time.
Yes. My concern is about the cauliflower mosaic virus, the promoter, and last year in Scientific American magazine was an interesting article about RNA viruses making a cross-kingdom leap, a yawning chasm 1.6 billion years wide. We are talking about the tobacco mosaic ring spot virus infecting the bees. I'm wondering if Steve has done any research in this, and I'm with GMO Free Illinois. So if he wants to get in contact with me on Facebook, he can find me there.
Well, Grist just reported that a new study published two Thursdays ago shows a correlation between honeybee colony deaths and neonicotinoid pesticide usage in the United Kingdom. We've done a couple shows on this.
Right, and those neonicotinoids are not unique to GMO crops. Unfortunately, they're being used on many other non-GMO crops, so that's a major issue in itself. No, I haven't had time to do the specific kind of research that the caller asked about, but She's right to be concerned about the use of the booster, the powerful booster promoter from the cauliflower mosaic virus. I actually referred to that booster earlier. I just didn't specifically give the name of the virus from which it was derived. But that creates risks when it's used in the genetically engineered crops. And as I said, most of the GMOs on the market contain that booster. That booster is being used to drive the expression of the foreign genes that were transplanted into the crop. Otherwise, those genes wouldn't express at all. But because of the presence of that booster, the gene expression is unregulated. It's highly unnatural. That's not being regulated by the plant's own regulatory mechanisms, and it's basically pumping out, those genes are pumping out their product round the clock in an unregulated manner that can create several different kinds of problems.
And this was also published in Nature, and we will definitely follow up on this. Thank you. We have just about a minute left, and I mean, we're being inundated with emails, for example, like this one. Philosophy and law degrees makes an expert on biology. There's only one discredited study saying GMOs are unsafe. I cited Will Salatin. We invited him. He didn't get back to us. He writes, the World Health Organization, the American Medical Association, the National Academy of Sciences, the American Association for the Advancement of Science have all declared that there's no good evidence GMOs are unsafe.
There's plenty of good evidence. And again, there was a statement there, one study showing something was unsafe that's been discredited. There have been several studies, many studies.
Where can we find them?
Well, again, my book reviews many of the important ones. And I said there's an excellent free resource, GMO Myths and Truths, available at earthopensource.org, written by two molecular geneticists and a really good researcher that reviews the evidence. And again, that's just, again, people who somehow think there's only been one study have been deeply misled. And that was a solid study, far better than the studies that purport to show safety. Also, my book examines the 2004 report of the National Academy of Science and shows that it's filled with illogic itself. It's inconsistent. As a philosopher, I can do that. A philosopher's job is to examine science and find out whether it's coherent or not. And anyway, I consulted with scientists, I read the science, and scientists have signed off on my book saying it's scientifically solid. So
Stephen Drucker is a public interest attorney and author of Altered Genes, Twisted Truth. You can find out about his speaking engagements at the Soil Not Oil Conference in Richmond this weekend and the Heirloom Expo in Santa Rosa next Tuesday, September 8th. Stephen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
Thank you, and thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. How are people in the Gulf faring 10 years after Katrina? On the next Your Call, we'll mark the 10th anniversary of the hurricane by speaking with investigative journalist Gary Rivlin about his new book, Katrina, After the Flood. The levee failures devastated the Gulf Coast and resulted in the deaths of 1,800 people. More than a million were displaced. A decade later, what's the state of recovery policies in New Orleans and other affected regions? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.
Local Public Radio, KALW, San Francisco, online, KALW.org. The fall membership campaign gets underway on the 8th of September, run through the 17th. If you'd like to help us out by maybe answering telephones, here's the number to call, 415-841-4121, extension 1, 415-841-4121, extension 1. Coming up next, it's World Have Your Say from the BBC. The program was recorded earlier this morning for broadcast at this time. It's 11 o'clock, and this is 91.7 FM, KALW, San Francisco.
Hello, I'm Chloe Tilley. Welcome to World Have Your Say. Protecting the people or keeping them out?
That temporary measure we are trying to set up at the southern borders are not dividing but protecting not only the Hungarian border but also the borders of the European Union.
The fence being built along Hungary's border with Serbia to keep out illegal migrants should not even be used for animals, according to the French government. Well, we'll hear the Hungarian view on the 175-kilometre fence. Lots of you picking up on Chrissy Hynde's comments about rape. Despite being sexually assaulted herself, she says if you don't want to entice a rapist, don't wear high heels so you can't run from him. We'll hear from rape survivors. Plus,
hotbed of champions.
How Kenya took on the athletics world. One.